When June was 8 years old, he was made into an international school unless we decided to medicate him for ADHD. But one thing that Anthony stood by our side, unwavering in his message of believe in your son, don't lose faith in him. And it still makes me teary-eyed to hear that. And I think that's the message that I wanted to get across. It's just like, even though the system might not be supporting your child, don't lose faith in them.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And today, we are going to be talking about global diplomas. It's very complex, but it is an amazing potential as a positive disruptor in how we think about the concept of what is school and why does it matter. And joining us today is Carmela Flory, creator of the Global Education Meetup Retreat and host of Global Nomad Parent Podcast and so much more. So Carmela, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Oh, thank you for having me. What an honor.
We are very, very excited to have you here. I can't tell you how excited I am actually to have this conversation, and I'm looking forward to the work that we're going to be doing together. But let's set some context for our listeners as we get started here. The Global Education Meetup 2025 is the world's first global education meetup, which is going to be held in Koh Samui, Thailand. And the goal is to create a common global school diploma, a centralized mainframe for a new system. The meetup will provide an opportunity to connect and collaborate with key players in the current progressive educational system and co-create an innovative degree and globally recognized accreditation. So, Carmela, that is a huge lift. So let's start with why the heck would you want to roll up your sleeves and do I'm looking for the context. Like, so we understand that globally the system, there's just so much that needs to be done in the world of education, but why this thing and why now and why you?
Oh, so if you're familiar with Liz Gilbert's book, Big Magic, I think she talks about it around the beginning of the book of like how ideas are born. And she's like, they're always looking for an able body to be birthed. And if that person is too busy, then they'll go to someone else and be birthed there. And I do have a hunch that this idea is not mine. I think it's a brainchild of many people over many years. Kavita, who's joining us at the meetup, she was like, I had that on my list for 2030. I do think the universe was like, what stupid person's going to do this now? And they're like, oh, look at her. She seems to have time on her hands. I also have, I just don't have the luxury to wait till 2030 just because my son is 12. I'm not 100% sure traditional education is quite for him. My daughter's thriving in it. For him, it's a bit more of a struggle. He got diagnosed with ADHD when he was 8, was rejected from an international school because they didn't have enough learning support. So we went through a bit of a hard time trying to navigate that. And I work primarily with mothers, and I'm hearing that a lot of them, you know, have kids a bit outside of the box. And instead of squashing them to conform, it's like, wait a minute, there must be another way nowadays to educate these kids. So also we lived in Bali for a while, met a lot of digital nomads who were having kids and are like, What are we going to do? So we had friends who, she has an 18-year-old and she just had a baby, her sixth baby. But they made us laugh because when we would meet with them, because they would spend 6 months in Australia. And moving with six kids, I don't know, or five kids at the time, how they did it. But I was like, how do you guys, like schools-wise, they're like, green school's open. Like they let us come for 6 months. This was before green school got bought up. And I think they were just trying to fill the spot. So they, and a family with five, they're like, great. Yeah, you're welcome anytime. But I'm like, how do you do it back in Melbourne? And she's like, we're running out of schools. Basically, they would apply to a new school every single time they would go back. And they're like, now we really got to settle down. So they moved back to Melbourne because they were running out of school options. So, you know, COVID wildly changed the landscape of how people work. A lot of these people are having kids. Some don't need to be in an office. And so the landscape has changed and education is catching up. So really, I do think I'm just that, like, I'm a puppet to the universe to be like, okay, well, you seem to be a gatherer. Can you gather these people? Because I'm not the educator who knows and who's been doing this for 30 years. No, I mean, I come from a long lineage of educators, and it's dear to my dad was raised by a headmistress and a teacher and my aunts. Like, everyone's, a lot of people in our family are educators. So it's something I hold dear to my heart. And before my dad passed away, I was telling him about this global idea when we were in Bali, and he was like, full steam ahead, like, do it. You know, he got a national, he was French. And he went, you know, he was raised during World War II. His mom gave birth when there was bombs blowing up around the hospital. And then he was in a classroom with, you know, I guess what would be a micro school of kids. He learned to read when he was three, just because he was in the same classroom as 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds. And his mom was the teacher. But he got a very French education. And then they gave me a very international education. And so I'm like, okay, well, what would be the next step? It would be to give my kids a global education. So this is where this is the backstory. But again, I don't think this will happen if these progressive schools, if educators are not on board, if I'm just a gatherer, that's all.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, so let's get into the weeds about the idea then. So this is all happening in late February 2025, and you have assembled, collected, gathered, coerced this whole group of, what's the best way to explain it? Really creative thinkers in the transformative education space. So folks who are doing a lot of really different things. Is there's, you know, when I look at sort of the group that you have assembled here, we're not all working on the same things. We're not all coming to this from the same angle. We're not even all thinking about the same kind of solution, which I think is the beauty and the power of what you're pulling together. But what is consistent about everybody that you're pulling into this is that everybody is convinced that there's better and more creative solutions out there to meet the needs of our incredibly diverse learners. You know, a planet is getting smaller by the day. And that means in many ways, the planet's also getting larger by the day. And I love that sort of dichotomy piece. So let's talk about the elements of the meetup itself. So these group of people are coming together. What is it that you have in mind, or the sort of the philosophy that you're sort of leading this endeavor with? Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Interesting that you would say that everyone has different backgrounds. It is true. And I mean, there's people coming from Australia, there's people coming from Singapore, there's people coming from the UK. Our keynote speaker is Oxford, but doing something at Harvard. Then there's you guys coming from Connecticut and Ohio. So there's, yeah, so it's very diverse geographically. And in terms of background as well, oh yeah, New York as well, and Monica. And I think TED purposefully put the way they would work out their talks was like technology, education, design, and they would weave it so that it wouldn't all be technology, all education, or all design, because they say that coming from different angles triggers different ideas. And so this was unintentional, and I just threw it out there. And to be quite frank, like, I do think the first adopters are the progressive schools, and they're the ones that I really was interviewing on the podcast and hoping they would come. I think they're just slammed and doing a lot. I mean, Tim Vera from Brave Generation Academy, which is the largest brick and mortar progressive school, they have schools in Europe and in Africa. He's running for like president of Portugal right now. So like, he would love to be there, but it's just, I think life has, you know, other things. So I do think the people who are coming truly believe there is something different, and they're not burnt out, which I have a hunch a lot of people in education right now, there's been so much talking and so little results. And so on the last call, I was like, can we just promise that we launch something, even if it's flawed, even if it's not quite right yet, but just no more talking without results. And everyone agreed. So there will be definitely something to show, something to put into action on the 25th of February when we're done with the meetup. So what is the philosophy? So this is the way I worded it. And I tend to be a bit more crass or more direct, and I simplify a lot. And there was pushback on the last call. They're like, wait, Carmela, you're using really strong words. Can you fluff it up a little? I was like, yes, no problem. So Janine rewrote it to like make it less strong. But I think sometimes just to get to the point, it helps to, like, I like to be a little bit sandpaperish just so that there's a reaction and there's a feeling to it. So the way the philosophy as I see it, and what Janine and I did, is we looked at all the progressive schools in the world, because they're already doing it. We don't need to reinvent the world. They're just very small schools. They're anywhere between 30 and 1,000 students. There's lots of brick and mortar, lots of online schools and especially thanks to COVID, that have started, and they're having their first cohort graduate now. So it's still very new, but they're working and these students are graduating. So we took all of their philosophies and we gathered it, we tried to summarize it, and then we threw it to ChatGPT, and this is the result that we got. So what we have in common, the collective mission, is that all of us want to reinvent education. We're done with the traditional school system, as you premised it. The second thing is that we all agree that we should raise self-directed, independent, lifelong learners. And then this is the part that was pushed back, like, because I'm calling them not students, which they're still students, of course, but I'm using the sandpaper approach, with educators, mentors, and experts, not teachers. And Kath had a bit of pushback, but we need teachers. And I agree, we need teachers. But it's just to make a stark comparison to what the old model is versus the new model. Personalized learning inquiry-based projects, so no standardized curriculum. Now we can use AI to build a curriculum around a child's interest rather than, I'm still looking at my son's, and my daughter's class things. It's like science, geography, math, and it's still...
We're still siloing content, right? We're still saying, okay, it's 9 o'clock. We're all going to go to math.
Do this from 9 to 10.
And you know, 9:54. How weird is that, right? 9:54.
It's going to be a bell.
We're now all like going to go... Yeah. We're going to go to social studies or whatever, right? And the reality is that is not even remotely what the real world looks like. And the fact that we have kids turn their brains off from that math class or that science class that they went at 9, and at 9:54 we say, now we need you to turn the other piece of your brain on so that you can do social studies, means that we're not helping kids see the interconnectedness of the world that they live in.
No, and I mean, I'm just watching what are they watching when they get home? It's like, oh, they're watching very different things.
Oh, yeah. You know, they're all over YouTube and they're learning everything from that.
And I'm like, where did you learn that? And they're like, I learned it from you. I'm like, really? Tube. I'm like, oh,
yeah, YouTube.
You're
right.
Teaching
oh.
me things. You're teaching me things. Okay, so no, the curriculum has to be designed from the student, from their lens of what they're curious about. Knowledge is no longer scarce. They have it accessible at their fingertips. So let's utilize it. Let's use AI, use all these things, and define it the way self-design do, which is every 6 months, let's just reassess where you're at. Did you set goals? Did you meet them? Blah, blah, blah. So this is a curriculum. So no more exams. Instead, let's have real life, real world applications. We all learn better when we catch the fish, have learned how to catch it. The second one is no more rote memorization. Like, my son is struggling a little bit in school. He's like, when am I ever going to need the Pythagorean theorem? I'm like, there's certain things you're going to need multiplication to figure out who's paying what for bills at night. But so don't dismiss all of the things you're learning. But yes, there are certain, especially when it comes to advanced algebra, there's certain things in there you won't need. But instead, let's just, you know, nurture curiosity and project-based learning, developing 21st century skills. There's some keywords that all these websites use. No individual competition. Let's you know, create valuable connections, collaboration, socio-emotional development. I get it. There's certain students that don't, you know, my husband will be fine not seeing humans for 6 months. I don't think we need to force collaboration, but certain people work better when there's a peer or someone next to them. What else? There was just, you know, whole human approach, supporting well-being, mindfulness, growth mindset, self-efficacy. And then the whole e-portfolio, like, we don't need a great transcript owned by a school and that stops when you're 18. Just have a CV that, you know, I already can tell you what my 9-year-old daughter, when she was 3, I could already tell that she loved painting. And my son loved jumping on a trampoline. It's going to be different when it's going to look different when they're 18, but it's going to be with the same, I'm pretty sure, along the same vein. So mastery-based assessment, ePortfolio as a learning record. And then 360-degree feedback from everyone involved, whether it's their peers, their mentors, their family, their friends. I've been given the side eye for reviewing people. They're like, you can review hotel rooms, Carmela. You can review restaurants, but you can't review teachers or humans. I'm like, I'd like to push back against that. I think you can get a 360-degree feedback.
Yeah, we can absolutely. And feedback is a really powerful thing, right? It allows us to make modifications. It allows us to be self-reflective. It allows us to find our own place and passions in the world. When feedback is a day-to-day ongoing mechanism, it's not punitive at all. And in fact, it's an encouragement, even if it's critical in the most positive of ways. I would agree. Kids need it desperately. And one of the reasons they push boundaries is A, they're trying to figure out what the boundaries are, right? But they are also looking for guidance, right? So they can make their own decisions, but they really desperately need the world to show me the why or the why not so that they can find their own path forward. And they will never be able to do that if we don't embrace mastery. You know, it's really interesting, the things that you're talking about. I have a new book out. And in my new book, one of the things that I talk about in that are these five things that I see in all successful, long-standing, sustainable, innovative educational approaches. And these five things are key. And it's interesting because and the order of the five things is really, really important, especially when you look at the progression of how more traditional settings decide to be innovative for the long term, right? So that's when the order really matters. But right in the middle of that set of five is mastery-based learning, right? Because we know that we have to make that shift. And that particular shift, I bring all this up to echo what you're saying, because that style of giving students the opportunity to learn in the time that they need as an individual to actually get and fully incorporate what it is that they're learning into who they are, how they operate, what they're going to do, and what they aspire for is really, really critical. But that can only happen if we step away from the compulsive need for traditional assessment, right? So it's one of the things that really appeals to me in the work that you're doing. I like the fact that this idea of saying that we can verify what students have learned in a variety of ways.
Absolutely.
Right? Largely, we can get the kids to learn how to verify for themselves.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
And also through failure, I read today, I'm trying to find it, Elon Musk's ex-wife talking about success. And she's just saying, like, you got to be ready to, like, basically completely fail and be off on an island with failure. Because, I mean, the ePortfolio won't matter as long as universities don't take it seriously. And so there's already universities.
But they're starting to. We'll circle back around on that because we've got some really great examples of how universities are starting to embrace that. Yeah.
And I've interviewed a couple. And one of them that sticks out is Tamar University out of Austria. And brilliant founder, Christian. And he was saying, like, we highly, highly promote failure. And you know, because, like, I got called in yesterday at school by the learning support, and they're like, oh, June, you know, his grades compared to the average of the other grades. And I look, they showed me a chart, and in geography and math, he didn't do so well on 2 exams that they did. And I'm just like, oh, here we go. you know, below average, blah, blah, blah. But just like, yeah, learning through failing. And then as soon as June was made aware of it, he's like, oh, I want to learn more about, you know, like, it just not promote you. Only embellishing when you've done, you know, gotten an A in a grade. I mean, I get it. They're trying to get him through the factory model of graduating with the rest of his peers.
But that may not be what that child needs, right? Exactly. You know, he doesn't need the factory model perhaps, right? And for some kids, that's actually perfectly, and it works, and they're happy. And at the end of the day, those are the things we all want for our children, right? But for some kids, it just does not. And so what the difficulty with is a strict traditional system. Obviously, we're all agreeing in this, or we wouldn't be, you know, having the conversation. And people who are listening to Learning in Box do the wholeheartedly embrace that, right? Is the recognition that, you know, every human is unique, right? And because every human is unique, then we have to be able to have systems that are flexible enough to honor that uniqueness and to allow them to flourish and to thrive. So, you know, so what? Maybe that particular child doesn't need to graduate at 18. Maybe this idea of graduation, and I put that in quotes too, of course, because that's an artificial constraint as well. But maybe, you know, that kid is 20 when that happens, or maybe that kid's 15 when that happens. And that full spectrum and continuum of what's possible is going to be the thing to help that individual thrive and find themselves in the world. And what are they going to be contributing in the world if we want fully formed humans, right? If that's the outcome, then how do we design for that outcome, right? I'm also really curious, Kamala, when you sort of think about sort of the longer term opportunity here. So this is the first of this kind of gathering, and granted, it hasn't happened yet. It's coming up, but when you think about the potential impact for this and the creation of something, right, to come out of this conversation so we're not just talking to ourselves again, right, and we're not doing something again. When you think about sort of the early wins then, and my hope is that we can have a follow-up conversation late spring to sort of see, you know, really what came from all of this. So think of this as a part one of a multi-part conversation. So when you think about that in your mind, what is the sort of win walk away in the short term? Let's talk about the short term first.
So short term, the schools that I've been in touch with, so all these progressive schools, so Brave Generation Academy with 1,200 students, there's Grade School, Boundless Life, there's The Hive in Dominican Republic, and then all the online global schools, which is Sora, Prisma, Aeon School, Recess, Cubrio, that used to be Galileo, Pacific Prep, School of Humanity, Vena School, Cicero, and King's Inter High. And then the universities, there's Minerva, Tomorrow University, Ubiquity University, and London Interdisciplinary School. And 10 years ago, half of these did not exist. So it's happening fast. And I do think there's going to be a tipping point where it's like, I think parents are just waiting for a mainstream, easy thing to be like, should I put my kid into, you know, charter, national school, public school, international school, or this global option if we want to be on the road or not, or if we just want something a little bit more flexible that suits one child. Like I would put my son in that, and I would leave my daughter in the international school because she's thriving there.
You know, one of the other things that's really interesting, and just for the listeners, so when Kamala sort of first proposed this and started gathering this group of people. And I'm super excited to be fortunate to be included in this group of people. So I'll have lots of feedback to provide, you know, or share out, I guess, is really the way to think about it, you know, with our listeners here on Learning in Box. But one of the things that's super interesting to me about this work is really the perspectives and the experience that the participants are bringing to the table. And when you listen to these folks, they'll all talk about, well, you know, this is what I believe, or this is my philosophy. But when you really start digging in and these conversations start to happen, the thing that I think is most magical about it is one of the other things that comes out is all the stuff that is being unsaid by each of these individuals, right? And you can really get a sense of where they feel like the gaps are, whether they put voice to them or not.
Oh, that's gorgeous. It's so true. It's so true. And I found the file I was looking for. So thank you for filling that and for saying that. So we've had, for example, like for me, this is like, I'm doing it for them and on the short, cause you asked short term and I have a long-term vision as well. So, for example, Paul Bennett, who is the founder of Cicero, he was saying, We would love this. We just got accredited by Cognia, but the idea of an e-portfolio presenting a story is better suited for today's world. We're happy to support this global accreditation program. There's been Tim Vieira, so the one who's running for president of Portugal, who has the largest brick-and-mortar school. He says, you can count on Brave Generation Academy to be a world school. We would love to offer this portfolio-based model. Let's keep speaking, and maybe we can be the first to make it happen. So they're just eager and ready to have something. There's Vlad from Cubrio, who has said, this is very much aligned with our vision. We want, this is the future of education. There's Martin for Carte Collective, who's like, this proposal could go a very long way for easing concerns and opening up a global education to many. Please make it happen. So this is just like a boost of like, yes, we're ready, make it happen, and we'll jump on board. They don't even care about like the who's, the what's, the when's. They're just ready. So that to me is like, that's the, if they're the first adopters, we've done well. And then, so that's the short term, is that these progressive schools will be the first world schools. They'll be the first ones to adopt this global education diploma, your e-portfolio. The big vision and the big hope is that eventually, and I know that, you know, education is a massive cargo ship that takes like eons of time to move, but it would be, but it's, go. I mean, COVID shook things up for us. We were able to go online very fast. So I do think, yes, there are naysayers who are like, good luck with that. Good luck to get people to band together and blah, blah, blah. Like, I've had a lot of naysayers on top of all these good people who see the vision. But my true hope is that at an international school level, for example, my son right now, when he turns 14, what if he could still be in the international school, be dropped off at the same gate as his sister, we pay the same scholarship, they have access to the same library, same cafeteria, friends, but instead of graduating with GCSEs, which is what the school does, or IB, he could just do this global diploma. And so my dream is that it will be equally as recognized and easily as picked and worth just as much for a university or for a potential employee down the road to showcase what a student has learned. And then even at a national level, any student, whether they're in school or not, homeschooling, any student who is curious to, because there are certain professions, let's face it, doctors, dentists, engineers. I want the pilot who's going to drive the plane I'm going to take next week to have gone through some sort of really rigorous testing. There are certain professions that I believe do need the traditional model, but there are others that don't. And so I think this is where the global diploma will fit in, or hopefully will.
Yeah, what I love about the idea, the concept, and, you know, again, it'll be really interesting to see what this group comes up with, right? And I do think it's going to morph, even over the course of the few days that we're all together, and I think that's a beautiful thing. But ultimately, my hope, is that what everybody's able to walk away with is a set of opportunities. Let's call it that for right now. A set of opportunities, right, that will get us to the totality of a young person's potential, right? And if we can honor the totality of that journey, then it is my hope that those folks, when they move on to whatever is next, right, that they do so with passion, with some experience, right? Because they got to try things, because they were not confined to the four walls or, you know, the eight hours and 22 minutes or whatever it happens to be of required seat time in their day to learn, to be, to contribute, to question, to explore, right? So those are the things that I'm excited to see, very much so, because it taps into my own curiosity about what's possible. What if, right? I'd love what if. What if? I do indeed. So I really, really appreciate the conversation that we're having today. And so before we close the conversation, for the folks that are out there going, I'm really curious about this. You know, I want to know more, or how could I possibly get involved with this? And it is early days, but what what advice would you have to that parent that's out there that's got one kid that's doing great and another kid that's not? Because I can't tell you, that's even my own family's same journey. I think there's a lot of us that have had that journey over the years, right? Or that teacher that's like, oh my gosh, if we could only do that, right? That I would feel so much more fulfilled in the things that I'm doing, even though I'm doing really cool and amazing things, but maybe there's these other opportunities. Or a community that says, we're not serving the needs of our kids. Our graduation rate is less than 60%, or, you know, we only have 48% of the kids that show up on any given day. I mean, that's not educating, right? So what would you say to those folks, just really high level, about how they think about the work that they're going to do in the next little bit while this group is doing its work and other really amazing innovators are also doing work out there in the world? How do you sustain those folks in the trenches?
Our son works with, so when he was 8 and we were going through a bit of a rough patch, and I think this is maybe the listener I'm talking to is the one who's like really in the trenches right now, being like, whoa, this is hard right now. What's next? And it doesn't exist quite yet. So our son started working with a man called Anthony, who's, I mean, he calls himself a counselor, but I think he's way more than this. And if you allow me, do I have a minute just to read what I wrote about him? So our son has had the immense pleasure and privilege to learn with Anthony for every week for almost, and now it's probably 7 years. When June was 8 years old, he was late entering international school unless we decided to medicate him for ADHD, and we didn't. So, but one thing that Anthony stood by our side, unwavering in his message of believe in your son, don't lose faith in him. And it still makes me teary-eyed to hear that. And I think that's the message that I wanted to get across. It's just like, even though the system might not be supporting your child, don't lose faith in them. And in the end, we decided not to medicate him. And while the system was trying to categorize and label and pressure him to fit into a box, Anthony did the exact opposite. Anthony understood that June needed to move to assimilate material. And so he let him do that during the calls. He talked to him today again. So to give some context, June, our son, has quit jujitsu, guitar, soccer, tennis, ballet. He did do ballet for 2 months. Swimming, skateboarding, Japanese, 3D printing, jumping on trampolines, playing Minecraft, piano, and many other activities. But talking to Anthony is something he looks forward to every week without fail. Even during the holidays, June asks to talk with Anthony. And when we asked him why he loved working with Anthony so much, he answered, because he respects me and I respect him. I learn from him and he learns from me. He's interested in what I'm interested in, and I love what and how he teaches me. And I know that he really cares about me. So the importance of having someone like Anthony, having his back and validating him, is an immense blessing. Instead of feeling shut down over the years, June has built resilience and confidence throughout the years, all thanks to Anthony. And truth be told, sometimes it wasn't easy. For example, I remember once it was a rainy day. June had been cooped up indoors. He was underslept from having a sleepover. The only thing he had eaten that day was maybe grape candy and Cheetos at a birthday party that morning. And then we had a minor argument about being late and he needed to pee and he was like a nervous horse in a pin. And we just threw him in a Zoom call. We're like, and whispered, good luck, Anthony, underneath our breath as we like gently closed the door. And lo and behold, not sure by what magical alchemy Anthony managed to do it, but we found a really calm June at the end of their call, teaching us about gratitude, empathy, and mindfulness. So that's a mastery. I mean, finding that one human that believes in your child. I mean, of course we do as their parents, but just someone external. I do believe it deserves a standing ovation. So I think just finding good humans, the good adults that believe in our children and regardless of their behavior, because I think we take, you know, we're their parent, we want them to like fit in for certain circumstances. But just find that unconditionally loving grandparent or aunt or uncle or friend or coach if need be, but anything or anyone, and pets do the job too, but people who never waver on their faith in your child.
100%. And I think that's a beautiful way to wrap up this conversation, is just to recognize that all of us kids in particular, when you find those incredible mentors, teachers, advisors, whatever label you want to put on that individual, that it's a powerful thing, because relationships matter so much. So thank you so much, Carmela, for taking time out of your evening in this case to chat with us. We appreciate it. And we will follow up. We'll find out what happens.
I'm curious too.
Exactly. We're all interested in what's going to happen. So I appreciate the opportunity to set the stage for our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me, Annalise, and I can't wait to meet you in person soon.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin, and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.